Now, more about Amak Galil and how he came to hook up with this team, returning once again to the Sheehan affidavit. Moreover, Ricardo and William Grease are reported by a source number 51, a former Contra member active in the Miami area with direct knowledge of the Miami Contra community, to be one Raul Villaverde and his brother, either Rafael or Jorge Villaverde. The Villaverde brothers are close associates of defendant Rafael Quintero, who worked with defendant Quintero as professional assassins for Edwin Wilson in Iran and Libya between 1976 and 80. According to source number 51, it was in Iran and Libya, while working for Wilson, that Raul and Rafael Villaverde met Amak Galil, the right-wing anti-Qaddafi Libyan terrorist, whom the defendants actually procured to carry out the La Penca bombing. So Amak Galil, being a Libyan, does indeed go back to the Triple Wilson operation in Libya. We dealt with the Villaverde brothers and the apparent death of Rafael Villaverde in an explosion off of Miami in 1980, but then maybe it was earlier than that. At any rate, though, for reference on the Villaverde brothers, Radio Free America number 4, and here indeed we find that Amak Galil, the alleged bomber at La Penca, was indeed part of the Triple Wilson team recruited by the Triple Wilson operation in Libya.
There was another thing, and I just wanted to check in on that and go back over real quick in the, would have been 35, about 35 or so, or 36 rather, I guess it was. Wasn't there a mention of Robert Owen specifically linked into the whole thing with the, in one of the ones that you just read?
That was actually in These Times.
Oh, in These Times article, okay. Mm-hmm. Because since Robert Owen was another person that got quite a bit of publicity for his, you know, running around in the rain, you know, getting traveler's checks to Ollie North, I thought it was important that we emphasize that this man was not just involved in carrying traveler's checks around, that in fact he was apparently a key part of this whole guns and drugs and C4 explosives network.
Yeah, specifically Jack Terrell, in his notes, which we read, apparently linked Robert Owen very closely to this operation.
Now, we're going to read a short article from the San Francisco Chronicle, we're dropping consonants here, for Wednesday, May 20th, 1987. The headline is, Qaddafi Linked to Assassination Try. Now, again, this is Robert Owen, the self-same Robert Owen, the former State Department consultant. And this is an article that's generated out of Owen's testimony. Owen told congressional investigators at the Iran-Contra hearings yesterday that Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi may have been responsible for an attempt on the life of former Nicaraguan rebel leader Aden Pastora in 1984. Owen said that it was his understanding that Gaddafi had given Pastora $3 million in support of Pastora's Costa Rican-based rebels. Before the assassination attempt, Pastora received a message that Gaddafi, quote, wanted him to come and meet with him, unquote, Owen said, adding that he learned of this from Pastora's brother. Well, a variety of entertaining and interesting things here. First of all, the idea that Muammar Gaddafi, who, of course, the Reagan administration has been painting for years as being one of the arch demons of the radical Islamic left, would be giving money to Aden Pastora to attempt to overthrow the Sandinistas, if he was, in fact, a radical Islamic leftist. The other interesting thing, of course, as we've just discovered, talked about from the Sheehan affidavit, is the fact that Amak Galil, a right-wing Libyan terrorist, in fact, was recruited during Ed Wilson and Frank Turpel's sojourn in Libya working for Muammar Gaddafi. So, in fact, there may be some strange truth to Robert Owen's testimony, which, of course, on the surface would lead people to go, oh, yeah, those crazy leftists are at it again against each other. But, in fact, one does also wonder how, if Wilson and Turpel were working for Muammar Gaddafi, kept in the quote People's Palace, which is you know, one of the main buildings in the Libyan capital, how they also happened at the same time to come in contact with Amak Galil, who is supposed to be a quote anti-Gaddafi Libyan right winger, and one has to wonder exactly who's anti who and who in fact is really working for who in this whole mess.
One of the reasons that we're supposed to be overthrowing the Sandinistas is because they're serving as a base for, among others, Libyan terrorists. So it's an interesting proposition there. Recall, of course, the fact that Robert Owen worked for Gray and Company, and that's who Neil Livingstone worked for, Robert Keith Gray himself on the board of directors of Consultants International, one of Ed Wilson's corporate fronts. Now, again, the scenario with the La Penca bombing is one that we've seen often, namely that of provocation. Set up an incident, get rid of someone you want to get rid of, and use that as a pretext for action. We're going to see that same principle, the principle of provocation, proposed to eliminate an opponent of the Medellin cartel and start an overt U.S. war in Nicaragua. Returning once again to the Sheehan affidavit, again, David is one of the informants of the Christic Institute people. David explained to Carlos that the international brigade supervised by John Hull and housed on his ranch to the north of San Jose, that's Costa Rica, was directly involved in the transshipment of large quantities of Colombian cocaine from the airstrips on John Hull's farm. Airstrips, which had recently been lengthened and improved to accommodate aircraft arriving at John Hull's ranches with loads of military equipment, weapons, ammunition, and explosives. David stated to Carlos that this cocaine came from one Jorge Ochoa and one Pablo Escobar, the two largest cocaine producers and exporters in Colombia, and that the cocaine was being moved from John Hull's ranch into the United States where it was sold, a portion of the profits going to John Hull and his international brigade to help finance the guns, ammunition, and explosives being used in their military effort against the government of Nicaragua. David told Carlos that Pablo Escobar had put a $1 million bounty on the head of U.S. Costa Rican Ambassador Louis Tams, T-A-M-B-S, because Escobar was infuriated at the efforts made by Tams when Tams was U.S. Ambassador to Colombia to obtain an extradition treaty between Colombia and the U.S., which would allow the extradition of Escobar and other cocaine traffickers to the U.S. for prosecution for drug smuggling. David told Carlos that the bombing and the assassination of Tams would be made to look like the work of the Sandinista government of Nicaragua in an effort to instigate direct military action by the United States against Nicaragua, while the international brigade collected the $1 million bounty to aid them in their purchase of military equipment for use in their military effort against Nicaragua. Basically, what they're proposing here is killing two birds with one stone, eliminating Tams, thereby eliminating an opponent of the Medellin cartel. And bear in mind that Jorge Ochoa is a member of the Medellin cartel, a key one. We looked at that last time. And provide the provocation to begin an overt U.S. war against Nicaragua.
Now, we've been talking all along about how some of the people involved, or quite a few of the people involved with telling the story of the Iran-Contragate and operation and the secret team's position in the Iran-Contragate operation and the involvement of certain other high-ranking administration officials, not excluding George Bush, happened to catch sudden cases of death. And one of the ones we talked about was Stephen Carr. Another one, apparently, is David, who is being quoted in the Sheehan affidavit, who apparently was murdered sometime after his deposition was taken. David is the only name by which this man is known. He was a Contra himself. But now both these people, Stephen Carr and David, were key witnesses in the aforementioned Louis Tams murder plan. We're going to read a little bit more about some of this right now from an article originally published in the San Francisco Examiner for Sunday, December 14, 1986. The headline, Arms Sale Agent Tied to Plot to Kill U.S. Costa Rica Envoy. The article is by Vince Bielski and Dennis Bernstein, special to the Examiner. Operatives in the Contra Arms Supply Network were involved in an alleged 1985 plot to assassinate Louis Tams, the U.S. ambassador to Costa Rica, according to congressional and other sources. They say the idea was to provoke U.S. military action against Nicaragua by staging the assassination to look like the work of the Sandinistas. U.S. officials say there is no hard evidence of such a plot, but Senator John Kerry, Democrat of Massachusetts, a public defender from Miami, and a Washington-based public law firm disagree. They say the evidence exists in the form of two men, a Cuban-American from Miami named Jesus Garcia and a Contra known only as David. Both said they were directly involved in the plot, and both refused to go along with it and apparently paid a price. David was reportedly murdered. Garcia was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison after his arrest on a weapons charge, which he says was a setup. A third figure in the case died under unclear circumstances in Los Angeles Saturday. Garcia, a former deputy sheriff in Dade County, Florida, said he became involved with the arms supply network, quote, to help save America from communism, unquote. A longtime anti-Castro activist from Miami, Garcia said he felt his actions were patriotic. He said he began his involvement by going from church to church in Miami, collecting boots for the Contras. Later, on March 6, 1985, he said he participated in a shipment of machine guns, mortars, and a cannon to the Contras, now under federal investigation. Everything was going fine, he said, until a February 1985 meeting of network operatives at a Howard Johnson's Motor Lodge in Miami. Quote, they asked me to help bomb the U.S. Embassy to kill U.S. Ambassador Tams. In a statement made public by John Mates, an assistant federal public defender from Florida who defended Garcia at his trial, Garcia said, quote, at this meeting, a blueprint of the U.S. Embassy and a schedule of the ambassador's daily activities was presented. The stated purpose of the conspiracy was to blame this operation on the Sandinistas. According to Mr. Stephen Carr, there was a $1 million bounty on the ambassador's head, which we would all divide. We were all to fly to San Jose, where we were to meet and be provided backup by Mr. John Hull. This operation was being coordinated by Mr. Tom Posey of Decatur, Alabama. Garcia said the bounty was to be supplied by Jorge Ochoa, a Colombian, quote, cocaine lord. Everyone was very excited about the hit. They called it Mission Impossible and getting paid for it. But I told Posey, no. I told him I wouldn't have any part of it. I wasn't willing to hit an American. It was too dangerous, unquote. Skipping down in the article, Mates, that's the public defender, also said the FBI has corroborated Garcia's story regarding the identity of individuals who attended the meeting and its location with employees at the Howard Johnson's. The FBI in Miami said it would have no comment on Garcia's allegations. Garcia said Carr, a U.S. mercenary involved with the Contras, was at the February meeting. Carr alluded to the plot a few months later in a letter to Garcia. Quote, I'm an American all the way, but I stop at killing other Americans for the sake of CIA war games, unquote. CBS News reported that Carr died early Saturday in Los Angeles. Carr reportedly suffered convulsions and collapsed. Although the cause of death had not been established, CBS quoted law enforcement as sources as saying Carr apparently died from a drug overdose. I should just insert parenthetically that there's still quite a bit of question over Mr. Carr's demise. One of the questions being how he happened to get needle marks in his elbow when he was apparently taking the cocaine intranasally.
Also the fact that, or the statement by an associate of John Hull's and Stephen Carr's, that John Hull told him to shut up or he'd wind up like Carr, and said, don't you know the CIA killed Carr?
Continuing, the two others named by Garcia, Hull and Posey, are described as key figures in the arms network in an October staff report produced by Kerry's office. It said Hull, who owns a large farm in northern Costa Rica along the Nicaraguan border, is, quote, deeply involved in military support for the Contras, unquote. Citing unidentified sources, the report also notified, quote, Hull's involvement in planning the attempted assassination of Aiden Pastora, and said Hull participated in planning an attack on the American embassy in San Jose, Costa Rica, in which the American ambassador was to have been assassinated and the embassy bombed, unquote.
So, again, the basic scenario was being proposed there. It was aborted due to the conscience of Mr. Jesus Garcia, but to do the same thing with Ambassador Tams that they did with Aiden Pastora. Eliminate an adversary, blame it on the opposition, and use it as a pretext for action. It should be noted also that Jesus Garcia is someone that we've dealt before. We dealt with in the first part of our program, or first part of our series, I should say. He was the fellow who had worked with Tom Posey and Jose Coutin. And it was from Jose Coutin's, in the Contra supply operation, it was from Jose Coutin's gun shop that the Ingram Mach-10 that was used to kill Adler Barry Seal was purchased. And recall, of course, that Seal was stinging the Medellin cartel with whom these people were working. And again, the rest, as they say, is history. We gave you that history in the last broadcast. But the point we're making here is the principle of setting up terror as a pretext for action. And if you can, eliminate someone who's in your way while you set up the pretext for action. And again, the terrorism being used to restrict our civil liberties at home, bulldoze the Bill of Rights, and to justify military expansionism abroad. We mention this because in our next broadcast, we're going to see an application of exactly that principle on a broad scale by the Reagan administration, even before it officially became the Reagan administration. So in a sense, we're going to pick up with the trip from Latin America will begin around the world with the next broadcast in that series. We will announce the time of that next Sunday.